I'd like to introduce the panelists. My far right is Ed Barnes. Next, Bruce Mansfield, Warren Chisholm, and Harry Traister. I decided I'd ask them to speak in alphabetical order, so Ed Barnes will be first. Each panelist is going to talk to you for 15 or 20 minutes on the things that he considers the most important in this program. Ed?
Hi. You know, I'm in the Medicare League now. I didn't know I'd be that old-timer. You know, I came into AA after AA was started 9 years. Oh, it'll be 30 years that I'll have. In August, my sobriety will be counted 30 years, so I'm not exactly an old-timer. But anyway, we have something for the old people and for the young people here, you know. I like to think of the story of these three old guys, you know. That one fellow was 79, the other one was 80, and the other one was 89, and they were talking about how they would like to pass out of the world. And the 79-year-old fella said, you know, he said, I heard that if you have a heart attack, you just go off. There's nothing to it. He said, that's the way I'd like to pass out. And the other fella said, well, he said, I heard that if you fall out of an airplane, as you're going down, you die, and when you hit the ground, you don't know anything. But this 89-year-old fella said, well, he said, you know, I'd like to be shot by a jealous husband. Oh, you know, I found out we can always find something here in AA. But as I said, I came in the way AA. We had about 14 groups then at that time in the Akron area. We had the same problems that we're having today. There's some people went out and got drunk and others stayed sober. But of course, there was only so many of us here that we could always, we're pretty much concerned about the members. If we didn't see a person at a meeting, we would inquire and find out what happened to them. And if they needed help, they went out and helped these people too. I was very well acquainted with Bill Dodson. Now, Bill Dodson is the guinea pig of AA. He's the man that Bill Wilson and Dr. Bob found at the city hospital. And his profession was an attorney. And at that time when they found him in the hospital, I think he was in there three times within that month at the city hospital for alcoholism. And it took a lot of money for, to keep him in whiskey and alcohol, so his wife had to go to work, so she worked along with him. But I don't think they could have got a better man than Bill as a guinea pig. He had wonderful AA philosophy. I remember one time going with him to a meeting, and I worked with a man, and a man got drunk after I'd worked with him for quite a while, and I was pretty much disappointed. And I was telling Bill about this man. And Bill said, well, Ed, he said, I'll tell you something. He said, if that man wants to drink, he said, that's his business. And when he wants to stop drinking, then it's your business. And you know, I carry that with me all the time. He also had quite a good sense of humor. And quite often he used to direct it at his own profession, you know. You're telling us a story one time about St. Peter. You know, he called the devil up and wanted to know if he would pay half of the cost of building the fence between hell and heaven. And the devil told him he wasn't going to bother with it. So St. Peter said, well, he said, if you don't, he says, I'm going to take it to court. And the devil says, where are you going to get a lawyer? He said, I got them all down here. I had some acquaintance with Dr. Bob, too. It was not very pleasant at first. Now, you see, I came into AA and I stayed sober for about 9 months. And then I decided to go out experimenting. And then I found myself in the community hospital out here in East Akron. And the doctor came in to see me. And of course, during the 9 months of my sobriety, I used to go to King's School, and he was there every Wednesday night, him and Ann. And so we got pretty well acquainted. Oh, he came out there and he sat down beside my bed and he says, what happened? Now, he didn't waste much words, you know. He was pretty outspoken. And I made the mistake by telling him, well, I don't know, Doc. I said I found myself in the bar and I didn't know how I got in there and I didn't realize how I got in. And I start telling him all kinds of lies. Finally, he got up and he said, no, wait a minute, before we go any further, he said, one of the requirements in this program, he says, is honesty. He said, you haven't got any honesty. He said, you know, he said, nobody pushed you in that bar. You walked in there. And that bartender filled your glass for you. He didn't pour it in your mouth. He said, you drank it. And he said, you was thinking about taking that drink for a long time. Oh, he said, if I was you, he says, I'd go out and get drunk and stay drunk until you make up your mind what you want to do. He said, you're taking up the nurse's time, you're taking up a bed that could be used by somebody else that needs it more than you do. And oh, he went on. And the more he was talking to me, the madder I was getting. Finally, he got up and he said, as far as I'm concerned, you stink. And he walked out on me. And as he was going out, I said, if they got people like that in AA, it'll never be a success. Think about it now today, the crowd we have. He had quite a sense of humor, but he would tell a story, a joke, and he never smiled. I remember him telling us one time that some woman called him, and she asked him, she said, are you Dr. Smith from the man that handles Alcoholics Anonymous? And he said, yes. And she said, well, I wonder if you could send me 2 bottles of that Alcoholics Anonymous. And the doctor said, well, he said, we have them in big different sizes. He said, no. He said, what size do you want? Well, she said, the biggest bottle that you have, but she said, send 2. And he said, don't you think 1 would be enough? She said, no. She said, my husband's been drinking now for several weeks. She said, it'll take more than 1 to sober him up. So I remember that. And I remember, you know, our big book was published in 1941. And Bill Van Horn and Wally Gillum and Dr. Bob, I'm sure that those 3 people had their stories in that big book. Bill Van Horn, I remembered him. Now, Bill Van Horn one time was one of the A1 salesmen for the B.F. Goodrich Company. And he went down that low that he would go into those supermarkets and heist a bottle of wine when nobody was looking. And that man, when he came into AA, done a wonderful job. And his story, if you happen to look in there, it's listed on the ward of the probate court. And Wally Gillum's story is fired again. And these 2 people are passed away now. And if I look back now, over the years, I saw all of those people, like Dr. Bob has passed away, Bill has passed away, Bill Van Horn's passed away, Wally Gillum has passed away, and so many, many people that come into AA when I did. But I want to say this. This is a wonderful fellowship. I know one thing. If it wouldn't have been for this fellowship, I wouldn't be sitting up here talking to you people this morning. And for this, I'm very grateful. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, Ed. The last remarks of Ed reminded me that originally I understand that the founders of this program thought it was for middle-aged professional men who had lost everything. Aren't we lucky that they opened the doors a lot wider? Warren Chisholm is our next speaker.
It's a real privilege and a real pleasure for me to be here this morning in the cradle of AA. It was my good fortune, too, to know the founders of this program, and I was so happy to see Bill's wife this morning, Lois, who is here. And I knew Bill real well and knew Doc real well, of course, and worshipped at their shrine many, many times. In the early days of my association with this great program of AA, I came to many meetings in the city of Akron. I came into the program before we were completely divorced from the Oxford movement, when AA and the Oxford program were intermingled. I met many times at the home of T. Henry Williams here with the early members of the program, as well as the King School group. And when I came and was privileged to become a part of this great program of AA, there were only three groups, of course, in the state of Ohio. And that was, one was at the home of T. Henry Williams, King School, and at Abby Goldrich's home in Cleveland. It was my good fortune, I feel, although I'd like to live it over again, to come into this program at a time when I needed it so badly. When I came here, in every single respect, I was bankrupt. Spiritually, physically, mentally, morally, and financially, about as bankrupt as any individual could ever possibly hope to be. For two solid years previous to that, after having lost my last job and everything had gone by the board, I was drunk. And during this two-year period, somehow or other, I figured out that the thing that was wrong with me was that I drank too much too often. I don't know how I was able to figure that one out, but at least it occurred to me. I had gone through life with some splendid opportunities business-wise and had blown every single one of them. And finally, I took the geographic cure. I'm a Bostonian by birth and upbringing, one of the improper ones, I always hasten to add, and came to Cleveland 40 years ago with another great opportunity and managed to hold on to this for a while because I knew that this was my last chance. But I finally managed to do what I had done with every other opportunity that had preceded that. I managed to let that one go by the board, too. We were in the midst of a depression. This was in the year 1937, when good, reliable people were walking the streets a dime a dozen. And the employer at that time wasn't picking the undependable, unreliable drunk, such as I was. And for two solid years, I stayed drunk. I knew what I had done to myself. I knew what I had done to my family. I knew that life had passed me by and that I was no place, and as I said, bankrupt in every single respect. And this I didn't like. And this position in which I found myself, I didn't want to be in. And I thought about my dilemma constantly. And I cried about it in my loneliness, and I begged God, please, God, just one more chance, I'll make it this time. And you know, every jam I was in my life, I was the greatest prayer that ever lived. I could pose for holy pictures at any given moment. And the minute that that situation, of course, had resolved itself, about which I was praying to get out of, I was the type of individual who always could take full charge again, who knew all the answers to everything. Nobody could tell me anything. The smartest guy, I thought, that ever walked the face of the earth. And here I find myself a derelict one day. And as I said, I cried about it in my loneliness. I begged God, please, God, just one more chance. I'll make it this time. And out of a clear sky one day, when AA was in its very infancy, 4 years after Bill and Doc had met, it was still in its very infancy, into my life walked Clarence Snyder, my sponsor, and told me this great story. Told me of the great possibilities that I had if I would just embrace this program of AA. And that if I did, not only would I find the solution to my drinking problem, but the means whereby I could meet and face and overcome every single problem in my life without running away, without flinching, and above everything else, without trying to use it as an excuse or an alibi to get back into the neck of that bottle. And do you know what? Some 35 years later, I am more soundly convinced than I have been at any time in my life of the truth of what my sponsor told me in the beginning, that this is the complete answer to every single problem that the alcoholic has. The greatest opportunity and the greatest privilege that has ever come into the life of the alcoholic. And I knew instinctively when he told me this great story, in spite of the fact that I had been drunk for 2 solid years, I instinctively knew that this was the thing that I needed and had needed all my adult life. And I instinctively knew that this was the thing that I had prayed to God for, and this was a thing that was going to work for me. And I again repeat, I am more solidly convinced today of the truth of that than I have been at any time in my life. And when Clarence unfolded this great story, he impressed upon me the fact, of course, that in order to achieve anything worthwhile in life, one has to work at it. One has to do something about it. One has to learn how to do the job that he has to do in life if he wants to get ahead. And then above everything else, he must do something about it. That there are certain things that one must do, and we say there are no musts in this program, but don't you ever believe it. Unless you do the things that this program so-called suggests, unless you do them to the very best of your ability every single day that you live, you're going to fall by the wayside. I've seen it so many times because I've been active in AA ever since the day I came in. I have never neglected to hang on for dear life. But why? Because I knew and I know today that as long as I think the way that I do now, as long as I keep doing the things that I have been doing through these years, and as long as I stay close to this program and AA, and what is most important of all, that I let the philosophy and ideals become a part of my daily life, that I have a very definite and absolute guarantee that no matter what comes along in my life at any given time, I need never take a drink again. I have a choice. I have the choice of being able to say no, something that I never had before the advent of this great AA program. And he told me, as I said, that you must do something about it, that you must believe in a power greater than yourself. And gee, it just seems that everything was tailor-made for me. This program was designed for me, because here I had just come out of a situation where for 2 years I'd said, please God, just one more chance, I'll make it this time. And here I walk into my sponsor. So it wasn't very hard for me to believe that there certainly was somebody far greater than I was. And you know, all I had to do, if I hadn't known that throughout my life, was to ask myself a few simple questions, because I thought I was pretty brilliant and pretty smart. If you were as smart as you thought you were, sometimes when you're thinking how great you are and you don't need the help of anybody to get any job done, if you're as smart as you think you are, if you have all that great ability that you thought you possessed and that you told everybody else you had, what are you doing here in the first place? That's the only question that I had to ask myself. And I knew that there was a power greater than myself. And then he said to me, you have to get to meetings. First he said, do you think you're an alcoholic? And I didn't know what he was talking about, quite frankly and honestly. But I thought maybe I'd better say yes. I thought I might understand what he meant, but I thought if I said no, I wouldn't get an opportunity to go any further. And I liked what he had told me so far. And you know, I didn't know what an alcoholic was. Nobody had ever called me by such a polite name for as many years as I drank. They called me a lot of things. And they weren't quite as polite as an alcoholic. A lot of people have objections to that name, but I don't mind it at all. It sounds real good to me after some of the things that I've been called. But at any rate, he said, are you willing then, he asked me the question. Having said yes to that, he said, are you willing to do anything we ask you to do? And I knew I'd better say yes to this one. I knew it because I knew he'd fluff me off right about then, and I said yes. And I've been willing ever since to do any single thing that they've ever told me to do in this great program of AA. And then he started telling me a little bit about the principles of the program. Told me about you got to get to meetings. And he didn't say maybe you ought to go to one or two a week. Maybe sometimes three. He said, like every night. And I said, yes, sir. And then he said, when you get to it, he said, you've got to help other people. And you know, we weren't long in getting other people to help. Very early in the program in the city of Cleveland, the first series of articles was written by Alaric Davis, a Cleveland Plain Dealer reporter, whom Clarence had snuck into a few AA meetings along the line and had some controversy about it after this came out. But he wrote a series of six articles in late September and early October in the year 1939 that brought people to us in Cleveland in droves. Every wife in town whose husband drank a couple of beers a night on his way home wrote to us and wanted us to help them do something about their drunken husband. And we had some great experiences than that. And sometimes if you think AA just grew like Topsy, that it came out of nowhere and nobody did anything about it, that some miracle happened and everybody came flocking to this program. When we got these, Clarence Snyder used to give us the list of these people and where we lived, and we'd work on that particular section of town in which we'd lived, and we'd have to report back to him. And how we'd approach this thing, don't forget, these are wives and daughters and sons and people interested in their drunken neighbors and so forth that wrote to us, not the alcoholic himself. You know, you sometimes hear that the only way anybody will come into this program is that he'll call up and want to do something about it. And that wasn't exactly so in the beginning. We solicited business. We worked up like you were selling vacuum cleaners and you pushed the doorbell. And this is the truth. You wouldn't believe it. Try it sometimes if you're aspiring to be a real salesman. I mean, it might be good practice for you. We'd ring the bell and the lady of the house had come to the door, and always in these letters would say, please don't tell my husband I wrote, you know. So she'd come to the door and I'd say, my name is Chisholm, is your husband in? And she'd act like she had never heard of me before or anything else. And finally you'd get in the house somehow and you'd sit down and talk about the day and what kind of weather it was and so forth. And then finally you'd get into your pitch and you'd say to him, I understand you're having a problem with your drinking. Try that sometime to a perfect stranger. I understand you're having a drinking problem. And if you have, you wouldn't give him a chance to answer yes or no. And if you have, I can do something to help you. My name is Warren Chisholm and I belong to AA. And he never heard of AA any more than the man on the moon, you know. And geez, I've been kicked out of some of the nicest homes in this in the city of Cleveland. But by the same token, I have been invited to stay so many times. And this is how AA grew and developed. This is how it was pioneered, just the same as Doc and Bob, Doc and Bill pioneered it in the beginning. The first thing they did when they talked to each other was to seek out a drunk, to call the Akron City Hospital and seek out a drunk. Bill Dodson, the first man that they ever talked to in the AA program, and tell him this great story, a man that had never heard it before. And this is how it grew and developed. And this is why I know that AA works. This is how I know that there is not the slightest element of failure in connection with this program to the individual who comes here wanting more than anything else in the world to get sober badly enough, to do every single thing that he's told, and to want above everything else to be sober every single day of his life. Why? Because he recognizes that staying sober is the biggest and the most important job that he'll ever have to do in life. It supersedes in importance everything else that we have to do in life. Why? Simple as ABC. Because unless the alcoholic can do the job of staying sober successfully, then he's a complete flop in everything that he undertakes to do. But if he can stay sober successfully today, tomorrow, when it becomes today, and every single today that he lives, he can put every single responsibility that he has in life in its rightful place. He can be a good husband, a good father, a good wife, a good mother, a good anything that he has to be. But like everything else, as Clarence told me in the beginning, it requires constant work and effort. And it depends upon how badly you want it, how highly you value your sobriety, whether or not you're going to work at it. If you do, I guarantee again that you cannot fail, no matter what comes along in your life at any time at all. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Warren. Warren, in talking, reminded me that in our preamble, it used to say the only requirement for membership is an honest desire to stop drinking, and they've dropped the honest. Did you ever run into a drinking alcoholic who could be honest? Just a desire to stop drinking is our only requirement for membership. Our next speaker is Bruce Mansfield.
Hi, everybody.
Hi, everybody.
How do you follow an act like that? I had an occasion some years ago when I was living in Canton where I became associated with AA to run into a lawyer friend on the street one morning, and he said, Bruce, I want you to do me a favor. I said, what's that, John? Well, he said, one of my clients was in jail all night, and I just got him out, and I've taken him home, and I'd like you to go out and talk with him. I said, all right, I'll do this, not knowing any better. I'm telling you this to prove Warren's point. So I went out to this fellow's address, and this gentleman came to the door, and I said, is your name Mr. Jones? And he said, yes, sir. Well, I said, your lawyer, Mr. So-and-so, asked me if I wouldn't come out and talk to you. I understand you've got a drinking problem. And, of course, he says, who, me? Well, I was a little nonplussed, and I said, where did you spend last night? Well, he said, in the Starr County Jail. I said, what for? Well, he said, what do you think for being drunk? Well, I said, then perhaps you do have a drinking problem. He said, I never had a drinking problem in my life. He said, I go to work every day. Well, I said, if you ever do have a drinking problem, call me. Warren's absolutely right. Let me say to you, first of all, that I'm here because Mary Frances asked me to be here. I think I'm the youngster in this panel of four members. And I don't feel quite right about being classed as an old-timer when there are people sitting in the audience who have more years of sobriety than I have. In fact, one of the gentlemen in the audience was at the meeting that I attended for the first time in my life back in October of 1945. Be that as it may, as Warren has said, you have to do what you're asked to do in this program, and that's why I'm here, and I'm delighted to be here. As I look around this magnificent edifice, incidentally costing $13 million to build, it occurred to me that there was something of a paradox in that here in the city of Akron, where AA started, that in the year 1974, our chairman and co-chairman, Julian and Jim, were able to arrange that this great building, and it is a great building, has been made available to a bunch of ex-rummies. Now this is a far cry from the places we used to meet some 29 years ago, and I think it's wonderful. Mary Frances suggested that I talk to you this morning on what is important to me. And let me say right off the bat that what may be important to me may not necessarily be important to you, although I suspect we're all alike. I expect that all alcoholics belong in the same basket. We've all got the same problems. In general, we all think the same way. And we all seem to have certain characteristics in common that led us to our downfall until we had to yell for help. It's important to me, as it is to Ed Barnes, and apparently it is to Warren Chisholm, that I was able to have a personal acquaintanceship with both Dr. Smith and Bill Wilson. It's also important to me that I was able to know Annie Smith and Lois Wilson, and I want to echo what Warren said, that it's great that Lois Wilson can be here today, and she is here today. This is wonderful. It's important to me that I am living in the year 1974. Back in 1945, my prognosis was not very good. And I feel very convinced, beyond any doubt really, or to use the legal phrase, beyond the question of a reasonable doubt, that I would not be here in 1974, and I probably would not have been here in 1964, and probably would not have been here in 1954. But thanks to AA, I'm here today, June the 15th, 1974. Being an egotist, and I guess all of us are at heart, I love life. And life is very important to me. Apparently, it's important to a lot of us because there aren't many alcoholics who destroy themselves deliberately unless they are psychotic or unless there's something medically wrong with them other than simple alcoholism. I went through the motions of taking a handful of sleeping pills one night, and the only result was I didn't intend to kill myself. Don't think that for a second. But I was putting on a show, and the result was I had the best sleep that I'd had for years. I didn't want to kill myself. I was too important to me. I don't know about the rest of you, but I had difficulty, and I still have difficulty, but not as much anymore, as contemplating a world without me. Did you ever think about it? But I've learned that I'm not as important in the scheme of things as I used to think I was. In fact, I'm not important at all. One of my early friends in AA used to say time and time again, and Warren will recall this, of myself, I am nothing. And he's right. In any event, life is very important to me. Self-respect is extremely important to me. And when I came to my first AA meeting, I had lost respect for myself. In fact, I hated myself. And yet, at the same time, I didn't want to die, but I certainly had no love for myself in the healthy kind of way. And by the same token, those of us who had to come to AA, we don't get here without going through a great deal of turmoil and strife and sickness. The initiation fees for AA are considerable, even though it doesn't cost us anything once we get here. And along that tortuous route, you lose the respect of other people. AA enabled me and enables all of us to regain not only our self-respect, but the respect of other people. And this is very important to me. You know, it's nice to feel that you're needed by someone. And I feel that I'm needed. I'm needed by my family. I'm needed by the alcoholic who hasn't yet been fortunate enough to find Alcoholics Anonymous. We're all needed by those people. And you know, it's a great feeling to think that you're needed in this world. So this is important to me. It's important to me that AA gave me the ability to learn for the first time. And I was 35 years old when I attended my first meeting. But it enabled me to learn, or to begin to learn for the first time, what kind of a person I was. And it enabled me to find out what kind of a person I was. And I'm sorry to say to you that it came to me as a great shock when I learned that my alcoholism resulted from my own characteristics. And I was greatly disappointed at that first meeting when I didn't get a shot in the arm and they'd say, go forth and you'll drink no more. Or a couple of pills to take each day. And it came to me as a terrible disappointment when they said to me, as Warren's sponsor apparently said to him, this job of staying sober is not easy. It's a job that you have to work at every day. But you're not alone anymore. You've got friends here who will help you. And they did. And I was able to stay sober because of that. And because I wanted to stay sober, obviously, more than I wanted not to, or I wouldn't be here. The philosophers tell us that if we don't know ourselves, there's no possible way that we can know other people or understand other people. Knowing other people and understanding other people is important to me. Our mission in life, of course, is to seek happiness. According to the great philosophers, this is the prime goal of the human being, to seek happiness. I'm reminded of a story that I read someplace of the businessman who came down to breakfast, and the girl who was doing his cooking for him was whistling and singing to herself as though she had everything in the world. And he was in kind of a bad mood. He'd had a bad day before, and things weren't going quite to his liking. So he said to this girl, he said, "Sarah, how did you find happiness? And how does one find happiness?" And this girl looked at him, and she said, "Why, Mr. Brown, you don't find happiness. Happiness finds you." And you know, this is the truth. I have found from my experiences in AA that happiness comes as a result, and only as a result, of helping other people. And this is important to me. I know, for example, that when I become depressed, and I do, we all do, I know because of what you people have taught me how to get out of this depression. If I can just get my mind on somebody else's problems and forget my own, I don't feel depressed anymore. So I've learned this, and this is very important to me. This keeps me from indulging myself in self-pity for a long, long time that I used to do regularly. I know now how to overcome that feeling. Get out and help someone else. Having a sense of purpose in life is very important to me. And I had none before I came to AA. Oh, yes, I was going through the motions of practicing law. I didn't know whether there was a God. I didn't know whether there was any power greater than I was. And believe me, I couldn't think of any job, including that, and this was prior to Watergate, including that of the presidency of the United States, that seemed to be important. And I suspect all of you alcoholics at one time or another in your life wondered what in the world was important. What good was anything? And I suspect those of us who were unfortunate enough to have a slip, as we call it, it isn't because we don't realize the consequences of having a drink. It's because somehow or other we've permitted our thinking to deteriorate to the point where we don't believe anything is worthwhile in life. How wrong, and how sad that a person has to get to that point, and it isn't necessary. If he keeps his eye on the ball and remembers that he's an alcoholic and remembers what he was taught in this program, you don't have to get in that state of mind if you're willing to do what the people tell you. Now, all of these things are very important to me, which I guess leads me back to where we started. And Warren said it much better than I can say it. My sobriety, obviously, is the key to all of these other things that I mentioned to you. Without my sobriety, I wouldn't have anything. I would lose all of these things that I have received through the grace of the Lord and the help of AA. And yet, I wonder sometimes whether we're grateful enough for the fact that AA has given us this privilege of living, of helping other people, and being happy. and thank the Lord that we lived at a time when Alcoholics Anonymous was here. Thank the Lord that Bill Wilson and Doc Smith were living in this century and living at a time contemporaneously with the time we're living in. Otherwise, just imagine where we would be. I'm sure we wouldn't be here. So, just to sum it up in one word, sobriety is the most important thing in my life. And I like to quote Jess Cosby, who used to be here, God bless his soul. And among other things, he said, he was often asked by people how AA worked. And he said, I always tell them it works just fine. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Bruce. Bruce, in talking, reminded me of when I came to this program, was first introduced to it, I just said I'd try. And I was given a recipe for Alcoholics Anonymous. I think it's every bit as good today as when it was brand new to me. And it has 4 ingredients, and I'd like to pass them on. We in Alcoholics Anonymous stay away from the first drink. 1 day or 1 hour or 5 minutes at a time, by asking God for help and by associating with the people in the program. Pretty simple. And when we thought we were so smart, it's a wonder we didn't think of it, but we didn't. It was God-inspired as far as I'm concerned. Now our fourth speaker is Harry Traister.
Thank you, Ben. Good morning, co-workers. I am full of gratitude this morning and have been for some time. I feel a privilege to be sitting on the panel with the old-timers. They made it mandatory that he keep me living for 27 more months so that I could be sober half of my life, 32 years. And I've got, by July 15th, will be 30. Now that is something, a miracle. God has let me live. When I had a brother in 66, it went like that. I've got the second chance. How many of us came into this program, was in a while, and said, hell, I know all about this. I know how to stay sober now. I don't need this program. They went out, but they didn't have that second chance. Thank God that when I first got in here, it was a miracle. I think we're all miracles, and yet we're only living the way we should have lived all our lives. But I was one of the fortunate ones to talk to Dr. Bob in the hospital. A miracle happened that I met him at the hospital. And he wanted me to go in that day, 10 o'clock in the morning, July 15th, 1944. I was out. I remember talking to him. I went in that afternoon because he gave me his card, and I was drunk, believe me. And my wife talked the good sister into putting me in. That I will be grateful the rest of my life, because those were the best 5 days of my life spent in St. Thomas Hospital. One man on the board here signed a card. We had cards in those days, and there was very few visitors compared to what it is today. It wasn't as elaborate as it is today. And you had to be older than 32 in those days, because they figured you had to lose everything you had and be a derelict, like Warren said. I drank for 25 years. I was missing work, having blackouts, had them at 13, didn't know what they were. I still needed AA very bad. But when I talked to Dr. Bob and went into the hospital, and I spent those 5 days in there with a good sister coming in and Dr. Bob and all the fellows that came in at that time, I listened. I was a very good listener. I was young. I come out of there with a different attitude that I could amount to something. Things haven't been all rosy in the last 30 years, but in the last year I have got serenity beyond control. I haven't worked for 2.5 years. I had a heart attack. I'm still living. Things are really good. And I blame it all on the AA. The friends that I have in AA have been so good to me, so kind to me, and have helped me. The first one that I ever put in AA took 9 months. And in those days, they said, the first baby you had, that was the guy that I sponsored, was just 9 months to the day from the time I went in. Went to the hospital, said that I sent him there, and I hadn't seen him in 2 weeks. And the next day, I was so happy that I told the boss I couldn't work. I had to go find this fellow. Well, you know how it is trying to find a drunk. It's like trying to find a needle in a haystack. But I did find him. And I finally found him at home. In the refrigerator, it was loaded with beer. Everything that should have been in the refrigerator was out on the kitchen table. And the guy was pacing back and forth. And I said, Bob, I said, you need a drink. He says, you think it'll hurt me? I never laughed so much in my life. But everything that was supposed to be in the refrigerator was out on this kitchen table, and it was loaded with beer, and he was afraid to take a drink, and he was pacing back and forth. And finally, that fellow sobered up. I mean, I got him in the hospital, sobered him up. And that was the start of a new life. And another one I'd like to tell you is when I was in, I was called into court on a hit-skip charge. And a lot of the fellows in the program were talking about getting guys out of jail. And at night, when I'd go to bed, I always thank God that I got by that day. And I kind of said a little prayer that I'd like to get somebody out of jail. And it so happens, see, so you want to be careful what you ask for in this program because you might get it. I was in almost a year at that time, and I got into this court, you know, and the case before me was one of these drunks, and you could tell he was a drunk. They just brought him up from the tank. His wife really didn't want to divorce him. But that was what was proceeding. In the drunk, of course, he had no leg to stand on. And something told me to get up there and tell him that I belonged to AA, that I could help that man. And it seemed like that there was a pair of hands got under the pits of my arms. And the third time this came to me, I jumped up and said, Your Honor, could I have a word in that case? Judge Powers, who was 100% for AA at the time, looked down at me like, who the hell are you, you know? And I said, I happen to be a member of AA, and that man's got a drinking problem. I can help him. That's how good I felt about it. Well, if you were the drunk, would you grab that straw? He sure as hell did. Shortly after I was getting ready, I was a mechanic by trade. A bus fell on me, and I was in the hospital, and I had this, it was just brain is all, but I was on crutches. This guy lived the second floor, 23 steps up there, and I'd go after him to go to a meeting, and he'd be out drunk. He worked at Aerospace, and the only place they cashed checks was Eastern Taproom. And Joe and Mike and Bill and all of them would buy a drink, and he didn't want to feel like a sissy, so he would drink. So if you got hay fever, walk through a field of goldenrod, right? It all amounts to that. But I worked with that man for 10 months and finally sobered him up. And he died about six years ago. But there's a lot of them that I could tell you about, but that's going along too far. But I just wanted to say how grateful that I am to be in AA. In 1947, I think it was, Margaret Maxson and I, there was very few people in AA at that time, as Warren can tell you, and we worked hard. And Akron, the birthplace of AA, had no telephone. And I belonged to the Cogga Falls group, and Margaret Maxson and I, she belonged to, I think it was the King School group at that time, and we argued like hell about getting an answering phone service for AA, for a listing. At this time, the old-timers, you know, always said, let's keep it simple. But progress is something you cannot stop, because look what we are today. Finally, after back and forth representing each group, it was decided that we would get the telephone and have the answering service answer it. Then the problem was getting people to put their name on the roster to take the calls when the girls got them. At this time, I happened to be in business in a partnership for myself, and one of the luckiest things that ever happened to me, I didn't make any money at it, but I sure did a lot of work for AA because we got that answering service. As I say, getting all these people to put their name on there to answer these calls kept me so busy that I had no time to think about drink. And that is the way it works. Action. Action is the most important thing. I'm one of the very most fortunate people in AA for the things that have happened. It all hasn't been good, as I've told you a little bit about. But things have just seemed to work out for me that I have got $1 million, not in money, but in happiness, in peace of mind, in serenity. And the way I've got that over the years has been by the things that I've done trying to help somebody else. When you go into a house where there's a drunken father or mother, the house doesn't look as neat and clean as it could be. The children are afraid of their mother or their father, whichever it happens to be. They're dirty. But if you finally get this person sobered up and you go back there a month later and things have changed and it's clean, the children are clean, they're smiling and they're happy, and that house becomes a home, the feeling that comes from within is what I say is worth $1 million, because you don't buy that happiness and serenity and peace of mind, knowing that you had one little part in helping that house become a home is worth $1 million. And that is where I get my happiness. And now I say I haven't worked for 2.5 years, 3 years, and I had this heart attack. And God is still keeping me around for some purpose, to pass the message. I'm not as active as I used to be, but I still try to get along with the people, go to the meetings. I attend at least 4 meetings a week, sometimes more. I enjoy all the people in AA because it's the young people that I like to see come in here. Because I know that in my own case, the time that I needed this, I should have been in at 15. And in 1941, we used to have a drunken sailor come to our place of business. And he sobered up. Eddie Armitage, a lot of people would know him. I think he's up in Massachusetts now. He used to be from this locale. And the boss told me if Eddie could do it, I could do it. And naturally, you know how we tried to quit. But like I say, the miracle happened. God so planned it that I fell into AA and became a miracle. I quit drinking. And I haven't had a drink in those 30 years. Some years. And that is a miracle in itself, because your mind changes, you think differently, and like they said, you get your self-respect back. Instead of being the town drunk, you become an alcoholic and then an old-timer if you keep working at it. And that's the thing you've got to do, is keep working at it. Do what you have to do to stay sober. Even though it hurts, it pains, and it takes a little time. Time is of little essence, because how much time did we spend on the bar stool? How much time did we spend out in a park or something with a case or a bottle? Those are the things that I look back on, and those are the things I let the other fellas do the experimenting for me, because I know that I may have another drunk, but I don't know whether I have another recovery. And that's the reason why I still keep going to meetings, try to do a little bit to help somebody else, and I act like a pillar up at the Falls group now. I'm the oldest active member up there. And it kind of makes me feel good. It's gratifying, but I don't let it go to my head. Like I say, I'm filled with gratitude. And I think, like Mose Yoder says, that am I grateful enough? Am I really grateful enough for all that I've received out of this? And every day something happens. Like today when my wife drove me down here, she gets up and she says, it's a bad day. But every day is a good day for me. It doesn't make any difference if it's raining pitchforks out there or if it's snowing blizzardly. Every day is a good day because I'm sober. I know what I'm doing. And that's the most important thing. You can think, you can do what you want to do with a sane mind, and you don't have to worry about that policeman or a lot of other things, the telephone and so forth, the bills that you didn't pay. Things really have come a long way with me since I've sobered myself up and kept active. And I like to see all these young people that are in the program today, and there are a lot in that are a lot younger than 15, I guess, from what I hear. And that there is really saddening when you find people that young that are too far gone. Of course, with all the dope they got around today, I guess that's the worst thing there is. That's a lot worse than booze. But even so, we have to keep this program going, because it is built from about 3,000 when I came in to, I think there's around 650,000 active alcoholics now, and there's still a potential that is greater than we can handle. So we each got to do our own part in helping. Let us be the examples, the miracles, that, well, how many people said that I would stay sober 1 week or 2 weeks in a small town? Everybody said, well, he'll never make it. And you know, that reminds me of one of the fellows that used to be at our group in the Falls. I was so young that when I came in, after I was in a couple of months, they finally decided that I was really a drinker, had some problems. He used to put his arm around me. He was from Paducah, Kentucky, and he used to say, Harry, you'll never make it. He died here a couple, 3 years ago, and about 6 months ago, his wife still comes to the meetings. She come up to me one evening there, and I always kiss her and say, hi, Grandma. She calls me Grandpa. She says, Harry, she says, I don't think you'll make it. You don't know how good that made me feel, though, to think about her husband who had been gone. But still she comes to the meetings, and still that brought back memories. And those are the things that I don't want to forget, those memories, you know. What could happen? But God has been so good to me, and he can be just that good to you if you just keep going, keep active, do what you have to do to stay sober, and I'm sure that your life will be a lot better, because you're only living the way you should have lived all your life. I think it's 100% spiritual, but like Warren said, when you go up and knock on the door and say, I understand you got a drinking problem. Who, me? It's rough being a salesman. But you still can be an example. And you'd be surprised how many people will say, now that guy, he's been sober for about a year now, and you might know him. And you'd say, well, boy, if that guy can do it, I can do it. So we got to still be the example. The people that know you, you know. When we first came into this, my wife thought I was the only guy that drank like that. But when you get in here and you find out that you've got friends that you used to drink with, that's when you know that this is a wonderful program. And the alcoholic, the drunk, that really needs it, should hang on to it with both hands and don't let go. And that's what I try to do. Thank you for listening.
Thank you, Harry. I'm certain that we're all indebted to these four men for sharing with us this morning. As I sit up here, I'm reminded that we have many very good non-alcoholic friends, particularly the spouses who stayed with us, who knew that this program was good, urged us to keep on going. A lot of them are gone. I'm reminded of Sister Ignatia and all her successors in the wards. We should be grateful to all of them for keeping the doors open. And we're very privileged today to have Lois Wilson, and I hope it isn't an imposition, but I'd like her to stand and be recognized. Came here from New York, flew by herself, and is staying with you who are staying up here in the dorms. I'm going to enjoy this whole weekend. We're deeply grateful that she came. The people who planned all these events were kind enough to have plaques made for each of these men. Each one has their name on them. I'd like to pass them out. Then we'll finish the meeting with the Lord's Prayer, and that's the end of the old timers meeting. Ed, he might want to. Warren? Bruce should be here. Harry? Last but not least. We'll say the Lord's Prayer. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, and the power, and the glory, forever. Amen.
Thank you, Mary Frances, for asking me.